Chapter 13. Continued. The trees were so thick he couldn't see where Snape had gone. He flew in circles, lower and lower, brushing the top branches of trees until he heard voices. He glided towards them and landed noiselessly in a towering beech tree. He climbed carefully along one of the branches, holding tight to his broomstick, trying to see through the leaves. Below, in a shadowy clearing, stood Snape, but he wasn't alone. Quirrell was there, too. Harry couldn't make out the look on his face, but he was stuttering worse than ever. Harry strained to catch what they were saying.
"Don't know why he wanted to meet here, of all places, Severus."
"Oh, I thought we'd keep this private," said Snape, his voice icy. "Students aren't supposed to know about the Philosopher's Stone, after all."
Harry leant forward. Quirrell was mumbling something. Snape interrupted him.
"Have you found out how to get past that beast of Hagrid's yet?"
"But Severus, I—"
"You don't want me as your enemy, Quirrell," said Snape, taking a step towards him.
I don't know what you—"
"You know perfectly well what I mean." An owl hooted loudly, and Harry nearly fell out of the tree. He steadied himself in time to hear Snape say, "Your little bit of hocus-pocus. I'm waiting."
But I don't—"
"Very well," Snape cut in. "We'll have another little chat soon, when you've had time to think things over and decided where your loyalties lie." He threw his cloak over his head and strode out of the clearing. It was almost dark now, but Harry could see Quirrell standing quite still, as though he was petrified.
"Harry, where have you been?"
Hermione squeaked.
"We won! You won! We won!"
shouted Ron, thumping Harry on the back. "And I gave Malfoy a black eye, and Neville tried to take on Crabbe and Goyle single-handed. He's still out cold, but Madame Pomfrey says he'll be all right. Talk about showing Slytherin! Everyone's waiting for you in the common room. We're having a party. Fred and George stole some cakes and stuff from the kitchens."
"Never mind that now," said Harry, breathlessly. "Let's find an empty room. You wait till you hear this."
He made sure Peeves wasn't inside before shutting the door behind them. Then he told them what he'd seen and heard. "So we were right. It is the Philosopher's Stone, and Snape's trying to force Quirrell to help him get it. He asked if he knew how to get past Fluffy. He said something about Quirrell's hocus-pocus. I reckon there are other things guarding the stone apart from Fluffy. Loads of enchantments, probably. And Quirrell would have done some anti-dark arts spell, which Snape needs to break through."
"So you mean the stone's only safe as long as Quirrell stands up to Snape?" said Hermione, in alarm.
"It'll be gone by next Tuesday," said Ron. Chapter 14. Norbert, the Norwegian Ridgeback. Quirrell, however, must have been braver than they'd thought. In the weeks that followed, he did seem to be getting paler and thinner, but it didn't look as though he'd cracked yet. Every time they passed the third-floor corridor, Harry, Ron, and Hermione would press their ears to the door to check that Fluffy was still growling inside. Snape was sweeping about in his usual bad temper, which surely meant that the stone was still safe. Whenever Harry passed Quirrell these days, he gave him an encouraging sort of smile, and Ron had started telling people off for laughing at Quirrell's stutter. Hermione, however, had more on her mind than the Philosopher's Stone. She had started drawing up revision timetables and colour-coding all her notes. Harry and Ron wouldn't have minded, but she kept nagging them to do the same.
"Hermione, the exams are ages away."
10 weeks, Hermione snapped. "That's not ages, that's like a second to Nicholas Flamel."
"But we're not 600 years old, Ron reminded her. "Anyway, what are you revising for? You already know it all."
"What am I revising for? Are you mad? You realise we need to pass these exams to get into the second year? They're very important. I should have started studying a month ago. I don't know what's got into me."
Unfortunately, the teachers seemed to be thinking along the same lines as Hermione. They piled so much homework on them that the Easter holidays weren't nearly as much fun as the Christmas ones.
It was hard to relax with Hermione next to you, reciting the 12 uses of dragon's blood or practicing wand movements. Moaning and yawning, Harry and Ron spent most of their free time in the library with her, trying to get through all their extra work. "I'll never remember this!" Ron burst out one afternoon, throwing down his quill and looking longingly out of the library window. It was the first really fine day they'd had in months. The sky was a clear, forget-me-not blue, and there was a feeling in the air of summer coming. Harry, who was looking up Dittany in 100 magical herbs and fungi, didn't look up until he heard Ron say, "Hagrid, what are you doing in the library?" Hagrid shuffled into view, hiding something behind his back. He looked very out of place in his moleskin overcoat. "Just looking," he said, in a shifty voice that got their interest at once. "And what are you lot up to?" He looked suddenly suspicious. "You're not still looking for Nicholas Flamel, are you?" "Oh, we found out who he is ages ago," said Ron impressively. "And we know what that dog's guarding. It's a philosopher's
Shh! Hagrid looked around quickly to see if anyone was listening. "Don't go shouting about it! What's the matter with you?"
"There are a few things we wanted to ask you, as a matter of fact," said Harry, "about what's guarding the stone apart from Fluffy."
"Shh!" said Hagrid again. "Listen, come and see me later. I'm not promising I'll tell you anything, mind, but don't go rabbiting about it in here. Students aren't supposed to know. They'll think I've told you."
"See you later, then," said Harry. Hagrid shuffled off.
"What was he hiding behind his back?" said Hermione thoughtfully.
"Do you think it had anything to do with the stone?"
"I'm going to see what section he was in," said Ron, who'd had enough of working. He came back a minute later with a pile of books in his arms and slammed them down on the table.
"Dragons," he whispered. "Hagrid was looking up stuff about dragons. Look at these. Dragon species of Great Britain and Ireland. From Egg to Inferno, a Dragon Keeper's Guide."
"Hagrid's always wanted a dragon. He told me so the first time I ever met him," said Harry.
"But it's against our laws," said Ron. "Dragon breeding was outlawed by the Warlocks' Convention of 1709. Everyone knows that. It's hard to stop muggles noticing us if we're keeping dragons in the back garden. Anyway, you can't tame dragons. It's dangerous. You should see the burns Charlie's got off wild ones in Romania."
"But there aren't wild dragons in Britain," said Harry.
"Of course there are," said Ron. "Common Welsh green and Hebridean blacks. The Ministry of Magic has a job hushing them up, I can tell you. Our lot have to keep putting spells on muggles who've spotted them, to make them forget."
"So what on earth's Hagrid up to?" said Hermione.
When they knocked on the door of the gamekeeper's hut an hour later, they were surprised to see that all the curtains were closed. Hagrid called,
"Who is it?"
before he let them in, and then shut the door quickly behind them. It was stifling hot inside. Even though it was such a warm day, there was a blazing fire in the grate. Hagrid made them tea and offered them stoat sandwiches, which they refused.
"So, you wanted to ask me something?"
"Yes," said Harry. There was no point beating about the bush. "We were wondering if you could tell us what's guarding the Philosopher's Stone apart from Fluffy." Hagrid frowned at him.
"Of course I can't," he said. "Number one, I don't know myself. Number two, you know too much already, so I wouldn't tell you if I could. That stone's here for a good reason. It was almost stolen out of Gringotts. I suppose you worked that out and all. Beats me how you even know about Fluffy."
"Oh, come on, Hagrid. You might not want to tell us, but you do know. You know everything that goes on round here," said Hermione in a warm, flattering voice.
Hagrid's beard twitched, and they could tell he was smiling.
"We only wondered who had done the guarding, really," Hermione went on. "We wondered who Dumbledore had trusted enough to help him, apart from you."
Hagrid's chest swelled at these last words. Harry and Ron beamed at Hermione.
"Well, I don't suppose it can hurt to tell you that. Let's see, he borrowed Fluffy from me. Then some of the teachers did enchantments. Professor Sprout, Professor Flitwick, Professor McGonagall."
He ticked them off on his fingers.
"Professor Quirrell, and Dumbledore himself did something, of course. Hang on, I've forgotten someone. Oh, yeah, Professor Snape."
"Snape?"
"Yeah. You're not still on about that, are you?
Look, Snape helped protect the stone. He's not about to steal it.
Harry knew Ron and Hermione were thinking the same as he was. If Snape had been in on protecting the stone, it must have been easy to find out how the other teachers had guarded it. He probably knew everything, except, it seemed, Quirrell's spell, and how to get past Fluffy.
"You're the only one who knows how to get past Fluffy, aren't you, Hagrid?"
said Harry anxiously. "And you wouldn't tell anyone, would you? Not even one of the teachers?"
"Not a soul knows, except me and Dumbledore," said Hagrid proudly.
"Well, that's something," Harry muttered to the others. "Hagrid, can we have a window open? I'm boiling."
"Can't, Harry, sorry," said Hagrid.
Harry noticed him glance at the fire. Harry looked at it too.
"Hagrid, what's that?"
But he already knew what it was. In the very heart of the fire, underneath the kettle, was a huge black egg.
"Ah," said Hagrid, fiddling nervously with his beard. "That's, where did you get it, Hagrid?"
said Ron, crouching over the fire to get a closer look at the egg.
"It must have cost you a fortune."
"Won it," said Hagrid. "Last night, I was down in the village having a few drinks and got into a game of cards with a stranger. Think he was quite glad to get rid of it, to be honest."
"But what are you going to do with it when it's hatched?"
said Hermione.
"Well, I've been doing some reading," said Hagrid, pulling a large book from under his pillow. "Got this out of the library. Dragon Breeding for Pleasure and Profit. It's a bit out of date, of course, but it's all in here. Keep the egg in the fire, because their mothers breathe on 'em, see? And when it hatches, feed it on a bucket of brandy mixed with chicken blood every half hour. And see here how to recognise different eggs. What I got there is a Norwegian Ridgeback. They're rare, them."
He looked very pleased with himself, but Hermione didn't.
"Hagrid, you live in a wooden house," she said.
But Hagrid wasn't listening. He was humming merrily as he stoked the fire. So now they had something else to worry about. What might happen to Hagrid if anyone found out he was hiding an illegal dragon in his hut? "Wonder what it's like to have a peaceful life," Ron sighed, as evening after evening they struggled through all the extra homework they were getting. Hermione had now started making revision timetables for Harry and Ron, too. It was driving them mad. Then, one breakfast time, Hedwig brought Harry another note from Hagrid. He had written only two words. "It's hatching." Ron wanted to skip herbology and go straight down to the hut. Hermione wouldn't hear of it.
"Hermione, how many times in our lives are we going to see a dragon hatching? We've got lessons, we'll get into trouble. And that's nothing to what Hagrid's going to be in when someone finds out what he's doing."
"Shut up,"
Harry whispered. Malfoy was only a few feet away, and he had stopped dead to listen. How much had he heard? Harry didn't like the look on Malfoy's face at all. Ron and Hermione argued all the way to herbology, and in the end Hermione agreed to run down to Hagrid's with the other two during morning break. When the bell sounded from the castle at the end of their lessons, the three of them dropped their trowels at once and hurried through the grounds to the edge of the forest. Hagrid greeted them, looking flushed and excited.
"It's nearly out!"
He ushered them inside. The egg was lying on the table. There were deep cracks in it. Something was moving inside. A funny clicking noise was coming from it. They all drew their chairs up to the table and watched with bated breath. All at once there was a scraping noise and the egg split open. The baby dragon flopped onto the table. It wasn't exactly pretty. Harry thought it looked like a crumpled black umbrella. Its spiny wings were huge compared to its skinny jet body. It had a long snout with wide nostrils, the stubs of horns and bulging orange eyes. It sneezed. A couple of sparks flew out of its snout.
"Isn't he beautiful?" Hagrid murmured.
He reached out a hand to stroke the dragon's head. It snapped at his fingers, showing pointed fangs.
"Bless him, look, he knows his mummy," said Hagrid.
"Hagrid," said Hermione, "how fast do Norwegian Ridgebacks grow, exactly?"
Hagrid was about to answer when the colour suddenly drained from his face. He leapt to his feet and ran to the window.
"What's the matter?"
"Someone was looking through the gap in the curtains. It's a kid. He's running back up to the school." Harry bolted to the door and looked out. Even at a distance, there was no mistaking him. Malfoy had seen the dragon. Something about the smile lurking on Malfoy's face during the next week made Harry, Ron, and Hermione very nervous. They spent most of their free time in Hagrid's darkened hut, trying to reason with him. "Just let him go," Harry urged. "Set him free."
"I can't," said Hagrid. "He's too little. He'd die."
They looked at the dragon. It had grown 3 times in length in just a week. Smoke kept furling out of its nostrils. Hagrid hadn't been doing his gamekeeping duties because the dragon was keeping him so busy. There were empty brandy bottles and chicken feathers all over the floor.
"I've decided to call him Norbert," said Hagrid, looking at the dragon with misty eyes. "He really knows me now. Watch. Norbert! Norbert! Where is Mummy?"
"He's lost his marbles," Ron muttered in Harry's ear.
"Hagrid," said Harry loudly, "give it a fortnight, and Norbert's going to be as long as your house. Malfoy could go to Dumbledore at any moment."
Hagrid bit his lip.
I know I can't keep him forever, but I can't just dump him. I can't."
Harry suddenly turned to Ron.
"Charlie," he said.
"Oh, you're losing it too," said Ron. "I'm Ron, remember?"
"No, Charlie, your brother. Charlie. In Romania, studying dragons. We could send Norbert to him. Charlie can take care of him and then put him back in the wild."
"Brilliant," said Ron. "How about it, Hagrid?"
And in the end, Hagrid agreed that they could send an owl to Charlie to ask him. The following week dragged by. Wednesday night found Hermione and Harry sitting alone in the common room, long after everyone else had gone to bed. The clock on the wall had just chimed midnight when the portrait hole burst open. Ron appeared out of nowhere as he pulled off Harry's invisibility cloak. He had been down at Hagrid's hut, helping him feed Norbert, who was now eating dead rats by the crate.
"It bit me," he said, showing them his hand, which was wrapped in a bloody handkerchief. "I'm not going to be able to hold a quill for a week. I tell you, that dragon's the most horrible animal I've ever met, but the way Hagrid goes on about it, you'd think it was a fluffy little bunny rabbit. When it bit me, he told me off for frightening it, and when I left, he was singing it a lullaby."
There was a tap on the dark window.
"It's Hedwig," said Harry, hurrying to let her in. "She'll have Charlie's answer."
The three of them put their heads together to read the note. "Dear Ron, how are you? Thanks for the letter. I'd be glad to take the Norwegian Ridge back, but it won't be easy getting him here. I think the best thing will be to send him over with some friends of mine who are coming to visit me next week. Trouble is, they mustn't be seen carrying an illegal dragon. Could you get the Ridgeback up the tallest tower at midnight on Saturday? They can meet you there and take him away while it's still dark. Send me an answer as soon as possible. Love, Charlie." They looked at each other.
"We've got the invisibility cloak," said Harry. "It shouldn't be too difficult. I think the cloak's big enough to cover two of us and Norbert."
It was a mark of how bad the last week had been that the other two agreed with him. Anything to get rid of Norbert and Malfoy. There was a hitch. By next morning, Ron's bitten hand had swollen to twice its usual size. He didn't know whether it was safe to go to Madame Pomfrey. Would she recognize a dragon bite? By the afternoon, though, he had no choice. The cut had turned a nasty shade of green. It looked as if Norbert's fangs were poisonous. Harry and Hermione rushed up to the hospital wing at the end of the day to find Ron in a terrible state in bed.
"It's not just my hand," he whispered, "although that feels like it's about to fall off. Malfoy told Madame Pomfrey he wanted to borrow one of my books so he could come and have a good laugh at me. He kept threatening to tell her what really bit me. I've told her it was a dog, but I don't think she believes me. I shouldn't have hit him at the Quidditch match. That's why he's doing this."
Harry and Hermione tried to calm Ron down.
"It'll all be over at midnight on Saturday," said Hermione. But this didn't soothe Ron at all. On the contrary, he sat bolt upright and broke into a sweat. "Midnight on Saturday," he said in a hoarse voice. "Oh, no! Oh, no, I've just remembered. Charlie's letter was in that book Malfoy took. He's going to know we're getting rid of Norbert."
Harry and Hermione didn't get a chance to answer. Madame Pomfrey came over at that moment and made them leave, saying Ron needed sleep.
"It's too late to change the plan now," Harry told Hermione. "We haven't got time to send Charlie another owl, and this could be our only chance to get rid of Norbert. We'll have to risk it. And we have got the invisibility cloak. Malfoy doesn't know about that."
They found Fang the boarhound sitting outside with a bandaged tail when they went to tell Hagrid, who opened a window to talk to them.
"I won't let you in," he puffed. "Norbert's at a tricky stage. Nothing I can't handle."
When they told him about Charlie's letter, his eyes filled with tears, although that might have been because Norbert had just bitten him on the leg.
"Ah! It's all right. He only got my boot. Just plain. He's only a baby, after all."
The baby banged its tail on the wall, making the windows rattle. Harry and Hermione walked back to the castle, feeling Saturday couldn't come quickly enough. They would have felt sorry for Hagrid when the time came for him to say goodbye to Norbert if they hadn't been so worried about what they had to do. It was a very dark, cloudy night, and they were a bit late arriving at Hagrid's hut because they'd had to wait for Peeves to get out of their way in the entrance hall, where he'd been playing tennis against the wall. Hagrid had Norbert packed and ready in a large crate.
"He got lots of rats and some brandy for the journey," said Hagrid in a muffled voice. "And I've packed his teddy bear in case he gets lonely."
From inside the crate came ripping noises that sounded to Harry as though Teddy was having his head torn off.
"Bye-bye, Norbert,"
Hagrid sobbed as Harry and Hermione covered the crate with the invisibility cloak and stepped underneath it themselves.
"Mummy will never forget you."
How they managed to get the crate back up to the castle they never knew. Midnight ticked nearer as they heaved Norbert up the marble staircase in the entrance hall and along the dark corridors. Up another staircase, then another. Even one of Harry's shortcuts didn't make the work much easier.
"Nearly there,"
Harry panted as they reached the corridor beneath the tallest tower. Then a sudden movement ahead of them made them almost drop the crate. Forgetting that they were already invisible, they shrank into the shadows, staring at the dark outlines of two people grappling with each other 10 feet away. A lamp flared. Professor McGonagall, in a tartan dressing gown and a hairnet, had Malfoy by the ear.
"Detention," she shouted, "and 20 points from Slytherin. Wandering around in the middle of the night. How dare you?"
"You don't understand, Professor. Harry Potter's coming. He's got a dragon. What utter rubbish! How dare you tell such lies! Come on, I shall see Professor Snape about you, Malfoy!"
The steep spiral staircase up to the top of the tower seemed the easiest thing in the world after that. Not until they'd stepped out into the cold night air did they throw off the cloak, glad to be able to breathe properly again. Hermione did a sort of jig.
"Malfoy's got detention! I could sing!"
"Don't," Harry advised her. Chuckling about Malfoy, they waited, Norbert thrashing about in his crate. About 10 minutes later, 4 broomsticks came swooping down out of the darkness. Charlie's friends were a cheery lot. They showed Harry and Hermione the harness they'd rigged up so they could suspend Norbert between them. They all helped buckle Norbert safely into it, and then Harry and Hermione shook hands with the others and thanked them very much. At last Norbert was gone. They slipped back down the spiral staircase, their hearts as light as their hands, now that Norbert was off them. No more dragon. Malfoy in detention. What could spoil their happiness? The answer to that was waiting at the foot of the stairs. As they stepped into the corridor, Filch's face loomed suddenly out of the darkness.
"Well, well, well," he whispered. "We are in trouble."
They'd left the invisibility cloak on top of the tower. Chapter 15. The Forbidden Forest. Things couldn't have been worse. Filch took them down to Professor McGonagall's study on the first floor, where they sat and waited without saying a word to each other. Hermione was trembling. Excuses, alibis, and wild cover-up stories chased each other around Harry's brain, each more feeble than the last. He couldn't see how they were going to get out of trouble this time. They were cornered. How could they have been so stupid as to forget the cloak? There was no reason on earth that Professor McGonagall would accept for their being out of bed and creeping around the school in the dead of night, let alone being up the tallest astronomy tower, which was out of bounds except for classes. Add Norbert and the invisibility cloak, and they might as well be packing their bags already. Had Harry thought that things couldn't have been worse, he was wrong. When Professor McGonagall appeared, she was leading Neville.
"Harry!" Neville burst out the moment he saw the other two. "I was trying to find you, to warn you. I heard Malfoy saying he was going to catch you. He said you had a dragon."
Harry shook his head violently to shut Neville up. But Professor McGonagall had seen. She looked more likely to breathe fire than Norbert as she towered over the three of them.
"I would never have believed it of any of you. Mr. Filch says you are up the astronomy tower. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. Explain yourselves."
It was the first time Hermione had ever failed to answer a teacher's question. She was staring at her slippers, as still as a statue.
"I think I've got a good idea of what's been going on," said Professor McGonagall. "It doesn't take a genius to work it out. You fed Draco Malfoy some cock-and-bull story about a dragon trying to get him out of bed and into trouble. I've already caught him. I suppose you think it's funny that Longbottom here heard the story and believed it too."
Harry caught Neville's eye and tried to tell him without words that this wasn't true, because Neville was looking stunned and hurt. Poor, blundering Neville. Harry knew what it must have cost him to try and find them in the dark to warn them.
"I'm disgusted," said Professor McGonagall. 4 students out of bed in one night. I've never heard of such a thing before. You, Miss Granger, I thought you had more sense. As for you, Mr. Potter, I thought Gryffindor meant more to you than this. All three of you will receive detentions. Yes, you too, Mr. Longbottom. Nothing gives you the right to walk around school at night, especially these days. It's very dangerous. And 50 points will be taken from Gryffindor."
50!
Harry gasped. They would lose the lead. The lead he'd won in the last Quidditch match.
50 points each,
said Professor McGonagall, breathing heavily through her long, pointed nose.
Professor, please, you can't. Don't tell me what I can and can't do, Potter. Now get back to bed, all of you. I've never been more ashamed of Gryffindor students.
150 points lost. That put Gryffindor in last place. In one night, they'd ruined any chance Gryffindor had had for the House Cup. Harry felt as though the bottom had dropped out of his stomach. How could they ever make up for this? Harry didn't sleep all night. He could hear Neville sobbing into his pillow for what seemed like hours. Harry couldn't think of anything to say to comfort him. He knew Neville, like himself, was dreading the dawn. What would happen when the rest of Gryffindor found out what they'd done? At first, Gryffindors, passing the giant hourglasses that recorded the house points next day, thought there'd been a mistake. How could they suddenly have 150 points fewer than yesterday? And then the story started to spread. Harry Potter, the famous Harry Potter, their hero of 2 Quidditch matches, had lost them all those points, him and a couple of other stupid first years. From being one of the most popular and admired people at the school, Harry was suddenly the most hated. Even Ravenclaws and Hufflepuffs turned on him because everyone had been longing to see Slytherin lose the House Cup. Everywhere Harry went, people pointed and didn't trouble to lower their voices as they insulted him. Slytherins, on the other hand, clapped as he walked past them, whistling and cheering. "Thanks, Potter. We owe you one." Only Ron stood by him. "They'll all forget this in a few weeks. Fred and George have lost loads of points in all the time they've been here, and people still like them." "They've never lost 150 points in one go, though, have they?" said Harry miserably. "Well, no," Ron admitted. It was a bit late to repair the damage, but Harry swore to himself not to meddle in things that weren't his business from now on. He had had it with sneaking around and spying. He felt so ashamed of himself that he went to Wood and offered to resign from the Quidditch team.
"Resign?" Wood thundered. "What good'll that do? How are we going to get any points back if we can't win at Quidditch?"
But even Quidditch had lost its fun. The rest of the team wouldn't even speak to Harry during practice, and if they had to speak about him, they called him the Seeker. Hermione and Neville were suffering too. They didn't have as bad a time as Harry, because they weren't as well known, but nobody would speak to them either. Hermione had stopped drawing attention to herself in class, keeping her head down and working in silence. Harry was almost glad that the exams weren't far away. All the revision he had to do kept his mind off his misery. He, Ron, and Hermione kept to themselves, working late into the night, trying to remember the ingredients in complicated potions, learn charms and spells off by heart, memorize the dates of magical discoveries and goblin rebellions. Then, about a week before the exams were due to start, Harry's new resolution not to interfere in anything that didn't concern him was put to an unexpected test. Walking back from the library on his own one afternoon, he heard somebody whimpering from a classroom up ahead. As he drew closer, he heard Quirrell's voice.
No, not again, please.
It sounded as though someone was threatening him. Harry moved closer.
All right,
he heard Quirrell sob. Next second, Quirrell came hurrying out of the classroom, straightening his turban. He was pale and looked as though he was about to cry. He strode out of sight. Harry didn't think Quirrell had even noticed him. He waited until Quirrell's footsteps had disappeared, then peered into the classroom. It was empty, but a door stood ajar at the other end. Harry was halfway towards it before he remembered what he'd promised himself about not meddling. All the same, he'd have gambled 12 Philosopher's Stones that Snape had just left the room, and from what Harry had just heard, Snape would be walking with a new spring in his step. Quirrell seemed to have given in at last. Harry went back to the library, where Hermione was testing Ron on astronomy. Harry told them what he'd heard.
"Snape's done it, then," said Ron. "If Quirrell's told him how to break his anti-dark force spell..."
"They're still fluffy, though," said Hermione.
"Maybe Snape's found out how to get past him without asking Hagrid," said Ron, looking up at the thousands of books surrounding them. "I bet there's a book somewhere in here telling you how to get past a giant three-headed dog." "So what do we do, Harry?" The light of adventure was kindling again in Ron's eyes, but Hermione answered before Harry could.
"Go to Dumbledore. That's what we should have done ages ago. If we try anything ourselves, we'll be thrown out, for sure."
"But we've got no proof," said Harry. "Quirrell's too scared to back us up. Snape's only got to say he doesn't know how the troll got in at Halloween, and that he was nowhere near the third floor. Who do you think they'll believe, him or us? It's not exactly a secret we hate him. Dumbledore'll think we made it up to get him sacked. Filch wouldn't help us if his life depended on it. He's too friendly with Snape, and the more students get thrown out, the better, he'll think. And don't forget, we're not supposed to know about the stone, or Fluffy. That'll take a lot of explaining." Hermione looked convinced, but Ron didn't.
"If we just do a bit of poking around..."
"No," said Harry flatly. "We've done enough poking around." He pulled a map of Jupiter towards him and started to learn the names of its moons. The following morning, notes were delivered to Harry, Hermione, and Neville at the breakfast table. They were all the same. "Your detention will take place at 11 o'clock tonight. Meet Mr. Filch in the entrance hall. Prof. M. McGonagall." Harry had forgotten they still had detentions to do in the furore over the points they'd lost. He half expected Hermione to complain that this was a whole night of revision lost, but she didn't say a word. Like Harry, she felt they deserved what they'd got. At 11 o'clock that night, they said goodbye to Ron in the common room and went down to the entrance hall with Neville. Filch was already there, and so was Malfoy. Harry had also forgotten that Malfoy had got a detention too.
"Follow me," said Filch, lighting a lamp and leading them outside.
"I bet you'll think twice about breaking a school rule again, won't you, eh?"
he said, leering at them.
"Oh, yes. Hard work and pain are the best teachers, if you ask me. It's just a pity they let the old punishments die out. Hang you by your wrists from the ceiling for a few days. I've got the chains still in my office. Keep 'em well oiled in case they're ever needed. Right, off we go. And don't think of running off now. It'll be worse for you if you do."
They marched off across the dark grounds. Neville kept sniffing. Harry wondered what their punishment was going to be. It must be something really horrible, or Filch wouldn't be sounding so delighted. The moon was bright, but clouds scudding across it kept throwing them into darkness. Ahead, Harry could see the lighted windows of Hagrid's hut. Then they heard a distant shout.
"Is that you, Filch? Hurry up! I want to get started!"
Harry's heart rose. If they were going to be working with Hagrid, it wouldn't be so bad.
His relief must have showed in his face, because Filch said, "I suppose you think you'll be enjoying yourself with that oaf. Well, think again, boy. It's into the forest you're going, and I'm much mistaken if you'll all come out in one piece."
At this, Neville let out a little moan, and Malfoy stopped dead in his tracks.
"The forest," he repeated, and he didn't sound quite as cool as usual. "We can't go in there at night. There's all sorts of things in there. Werewolves, I heard."
Neville clutched the sleeve of Harry's robe and made a choking noise.
"That's your lookout, isn't it?"
said Filch, his voice cracking with glee.
"Should have thought of them werewolves before you got in trouble, shouldn't you?"
Hagrid came striding towards them out of the dark, Fang at his heel. He was carrying his large crossbow, and a quiver of arrows hung over his shoulder.
"About time," he said. "I've been waiting for half an hour already. All right, Harry, Hermione." "I shouldn't be too friendly to them, Hagrid," said Filch coldly. "They're here to be punished, after all." "That's why you're late, is it?" said Hagrid, frowning at Filch. "Been lecturing them, eh? It's not your place to do that. You've done your bit. I'll take over from here."
"I'll be back at dawn," said Filch. "For what's left of them," he added nastily,
and he turned and started back towards the castle, his lamp bobbing away in the darkness. Malfoy now turned to Hagrid.
"I'm not going in that forest," he said,
and Harry was pleased to hear the note of panic in his voice.
"You are if you want to stay at Hogwarts," said Hagrid fiercely. "You've done wrong, and now you've got to pay for it."
"But this is servant stuff. It's not for students to do. I thought we'd be writing lines or something. If my father knew I was doing this, he'd—"
"Tell you that's how it is at Hogwarts," Hagrid growled. "Writing lines. What good's that to anyone? You'll do something useful or you'll get out. If you think your father had rather you were expelled, then get back off to the castle and pack. Go on."
Malfoy didn't move. He looked at Hagrid furiously, but then dropped his gaze.
"Right then," said Hagrid. "Now, listen carefully, because it's dangerous what we're going to do tonight, and I don't want no one taking risks. Follow me over here a moment."
He led them to the very edge of the forest. Holding his lamp up high, he pointed down a narrow, winding earth track that disappeared into the thick, black trees. A light breeze lifted their hair as they looked into the forest.
"Look there," said Hagrid. "See that stuff shining on the ground? Silvery stuff. That's unicorn blood. There's a unicorn in there, been hurt badly by summit. This is the second time in a week. I found one dead last Wednesday. We're going to try and find the poor thing. We might have to put it out of its misery."
"And what if whatever hurt the unicorn finds us first?" said Malfoy, unable to keep the fear out of his voice.
"There's nothing that lives in the forest that'll hurt you if you're with me or Fang," said Hagrid.
and keep to the path. Right, now, we're going to split into two parties and follow the trail in different directions. There's blood all over the place. It must have been staggering around since last night at least.
I want Fang, said Malfoy quickly, looking at Fang's long teeth.
All right, but I warn you, he's a coward, said Hagrid. So me, Harry and Hermione'll go one way, and Draco, Neville and Fang'll go the other. Now, if any of us finds the unicorn, we'll send up green sparks, right? Get your wands out and practice now. That's it. And if anyone gets in trouble, send up red sparks, and we'll all come and find ye. So, be careful. Let's go.
The forest was black and silent. A little way into it, they reached a fork in the earth path, and Harry, Hermione and Hagrid took the left path, while Malfoy, Neville and Fang took the right. They walked in silence, their eyes on the ground. Every now and then, a ray of moonlight through the branches above lit a spot of silver-blue blood on the fallen leaves. Harry saw that Hagrid looked very worried. "Could a werewolf be killing the unicorns?" Harry asked.
"Not fast enough," said Hagrid. "It's not easy to catch a unicorn. They're powerful magic creatures. I never knew one to be hurt before."
They walked past a mossy tree stump. Harry could hear running water. There must be a stream somewhere close by. There were still spots of unicorn blood here and there along the winding path.
"You all right, Hermione?" Hagrid whispered. "Don't worry. It can't have gone far if it's this badly hurt, and then we'll be able to..." "Get behind that tree!"
Hagrid seized Harry and Hermione and hoisted them off the path behind a towering oak. He pulled out an arrow and fitted it into his crossbow, raising it, ready to fire. The three of them listened. Something was slithering over dead leaves nearby. It sounded like a cloak trailing along the ground. Hagrid was squinting up the dark path, but after a few seconds, the sound faded away.
"I knew it," he murmured. "There's summat in here that shouldn't be."
"A werewolf?" Harry suggested.
That wasn't no werewolf. And it wasn't no unicorn neither," said Hagrid grimly. "Right, follow me, but careful now."
They walked more slowly, ears straining for the faintest sound. Suddenly, in a clearing ahead, something definitely moved.
"Who's there?" Hagrid called. "Show yourself! I'm armed!"
And into the clearing came... was it a man? Or a horse? To the waist, a man, with red hair and beard. But below that was a horse's gleaming chestnut body with a long, reddish tail. Harry and Hermione's jaws dropped.
"Oh, it's you, Ronan," said Hagrid in relief. "How are ye?"
He walked forward and shook the centaur's hand.
"Good evening to you, Hagrid," said Ronan.
He had a deep, sorrowful voice.
"Were you going to shoot me?"
"Can't be too careful, Ronan," said Hagrid, patting his crossbow. "There's summat bad loose in this forest. This is Harry Potter and Hermione Granger, by the way, students up at the school, and this is Ronan, you two. He's a centaur."
"We'd noticed," said Hermione faintly.
"Good evening," said Ronan. "Students, are you? And do you learn much up at the school?"
A bit," said Hermione timidly.
"A bit? Well, that's something," Ronan sighed.
He flung back his head and stared at the sky.
"Mars is bright tonight."
"Yeah," said Hagrid, glancing up too. "Listen, I'm glad we've run into you, Ronan, 'cause there's a unicorn being hurt. You seen anything?"
Ronan didn't answer immediately. He stared unblinkingly upwards, then sighed again.
"Always the innocent are the first victims," he said. "So it has been for ages past, so it is now."
"Yeah," said Hagrid. "But have you seen anything, Ronan? Anything unusual?"
"Mars is bright tonight," Ronan repeated, while Hagrid watched him impatiently. "Unusually bright."
"Yeah, but I was meaning anything unusual a bit nearer home," said Hagrid. "So you haven't noticed anything strange?"
Yet again Ronan took a while to answer. At last he said,
"The forest hides many secrets."
A movement in the trees behind Ronan made Hagrid raise his bow again. But it was only a second centaur, black-haired and bodied, and wilder-looking than Ronan.
"Hello, Bane," said Hagrid. "All right."
"Good evening, Hagrid. I hope you are well."
Well enough. Look, I've just been asking Ronan, you seen anything odd in here lately? Only there's a unicorn been injured. Would you know anything about it?"
Bane walked over to stand next to Ronan. He looked skywards.
"Mars is bright tonight," he said simply.
"We've heard," said Hagrid grumpily. "Well, if either of you do see anything, let me know, won't you? We'll be off then."
Harry and Hermione followed him out of the clearing, staring over their shoulders at Ronan and Bane, until the trees blocked their view.
"Never," said Hagrid irritably, "try and get a straight answer out of a centaur. Ruddy stargazers, not interested in anything closer than the moon."
"Are there many of them in here?" asked Hermione.
"Oh, a fair few. Keep themselves to themselves, mostly, but they're good enough about turning up if ever I want a word. They're deep, mind, centaurs. They know things. Just don't let on much."
"Do you think that was a centaur we heard earlier?" said Harry.
"Did that sound like hooves to you? Nah, if you ask me, that was what's been killing the unicorns. Never heard anything like it before."
They walked on through the dense, dark trees. Harry kept looking nervously over his shoulder. He had the nasty feeling they were being watched. He was very glad they had Hagrid and his crossbow with them. They had just passed a bend in the path when Hermione grabbed Hagrid's arms.
"Hagrid, look! Red sparks! The others are in trouble!"
"You two wait here," Hagrid shouted. "Stay on the path. I'll come back for ye."
They heard him crashing away through the undergrowth and stood looking at each other, very scared, until they couldn't hear anything but the rustling of leaves around them.
"You don't think they've been hurt, do you?" whispered Hermione.
"I don't care if Malfoy has, but if something's got Neville, it's our fault he's here in the first place." The minutes dragged by. Their ears seemed sharper than usual. Harry's seemed to be picking up every sigh of the wind, every cracking twig. What was going on? Where were the others? At last, a great crunching noise announced Hagrid's return. Malfoy, Neville and Fang were with him. Hagrid was fuming. Malfoy, it seemed, had sneaked up behind Neville and grabbed him for a joke. Neville had panicked and sent up the sparks.
"We'll be lucky to catch anything now with the racket you two were making. Right, we're changing groups. Neville, you stay with me and Hermione. Harry, you go with Fang and this idiot." "I'm sorry," Hagrid added in a whisper to Harry, "but he'll have a harder time frightening you, and we've got to get this done."
So Harry set off into the heart of the forest with Malfoy and Fang. They walked for nearly half an hour, deeper and deeper into the forest, until the path became almost impossible to follow because the trees were so thick. Harry thought the blood seemed to be getting thicker. There were splashes on the roots of a tree, as though the poor creature had been thrashing around in pain close by. Harry could see a clearing ahead through the tangled branches of an ancient oak.
"Look,"
he murmured, holding out his arm to stop Malfoy. Something bright white was gleaming on the ground. They inched closer. It was the unicorn, all right, and it was dead. Harry had never seen anything so beautiful and sad. Its long, slender legs were stuck out at odd angles where it had fallen, and its mane was spread pearly white on the dark leaves. Harry had taken one step towards it when a slithering sound made him freeze where he stood. A bush on the edge of the clearing quivered. Then, out of the shadows, a hooded figure came crawling across the ground like some stalking beast. Harry, Malfoy and Fang stood transfixed. The cloaked figure reached the unicorn. It lowered its head over the wound in the animal's side and began to drink its blood.
"Ah!"
Malfoy let out a terrible scream and bolted. So did Fang. The hooded figure raised its head and looked right at Harry. Unicorn blood was dribbling down its front. It got to its feet and came swiftly towards him. He couldn't move for fear. Then a pain pierced his head like it never felt before. It was as though his scar was on fire. Half-blinded, he staggered backwards. He heard hooves behind him, galloping, and something jumped clean over him, charging at the figure. The pain in Harry's head was so bad, he fell to his knees. It took a minute or two to pass. When he looked up, the figure had gone. A centaur was standing over him, not Ronan or Bane. This one looked younger. He had white blonde hair and a palomino body.
"Are you all right?" said the centaur, pulling Harry to his feet.
"Yes, thank you. What was that?"
The centaur didn't answer. He had astonishingly blue eyes like pale sapphires. He looked carefully at Harry, his eyes lingering on the scar which stood out, livid, on Harry's forehead. "You were the Potter boy," he said. "You had better get back to Hagrid. The forest is not safe at this time, especially for you. Can you ride? It will be quicker this way." "My name is Firenze," he added, as he lowered himself onto his front legs so that Harry could clamber onto his back. There was suddenly a sound of more galloping from the other side of the clearing. Ronan and Bane came bursting through the trees, their flanks heaving and sweaty.
"Firenze!" Bane thundered. "What are you doing? You have a human on your back. Have you no shame? Are you a common mule?"
"Do you realize who this is?" said Firenze. "This is the Potter boy. The quicker he leaves this forest, the better."
"What have you been telling him?" growled Bane. "Remember, Firenze, we are sworn not to set ourselves against the heavens. Have we not read what is to come in the movements of the planets?"
Ronan pawed the ground nervously.
"I'm sure Firenze thought he was acting for the best," he said in his gloomy voice.
Bane kicked his back legs in anger.
"For the best? What is that to do with us? Centaurs are concerned with what has been foretold. It is not our business to run around like donkeys after stray humans in our forest."
Firenze suddenly reared onto his hind legs in anger, so that Harry had to grab his shoulders to stay on.
"Do you not see that unicorn?"
Firenze bellowed at Bane.
"Do you not understand why it was killed? Or have the planets not let you in on that secret? I set myself against what is lurking in this forest, Bane. Yes, with humans alongside me if I must."
And Firenze whisked around. With Harry clutching on as best he could, they plunged off into the trees, leaving Ronan and Bane behind them. Harry didn't have a clue what was going on.
"Why's Bane so angry?" he asked. "What was that thing you saved me from, anyway?"
Firenze slowed to a walk, warned Harry to keep his head bowed in case of low-hanging branches, but did not answer Harry's question. They made their way through the trees in silence for so long that Harry thought Firenze didn't want to talk to him any more. They were passing through a particularly dense patch of trees, however, when Firenze suddenly stopped.
"Harry Potter, do you know what unicorn blood is used for?"
"No," said Harry, startled by the odd question. "We've only used the horn and tail hair in potions."
"That is because it is a monstrous thing to slay a unicorn," said Firenze. "Only one who has nothing to lose and everything to gain would commit such a crime. The blood of a unicorn will keep you alive, even if you are an inch from death, but at a terrible price. You have slain something pure and defenceless to save yourself, and you will have but a half-life, a cursed life, from the moment the blood touches your lips."
Harry stared at the back of Firenze's head, which was dappled silver in the moonlight.
"But who'd be that desperate?"
he wondered aloud.
"If you're going to be cursed forever,
death's better, isn't it?
It is, Firenze agreed, unless all you need is to stay alive long enough to drink something else, something that will bring you back to full strength and power, something that will mean you can never die. Mr. Potter, do you know what is hidden in the school at this very moment?
The Philosopher's Stone. Of course, the elixir of life. But I don't understand who...
Can you think of nobody who has waited many years to return to power, who has clung to life, awaiting their chance?
It was as though an iron fist had clenched suddenly around Harry's heart. Over the rustling of the trees, he seemed to hear once more what Hagrid had told him on the night they had met.
Some say he died. Codswallop, in my opinion. Dunno if he had enough human left in him to die.
Do you mean, Harry croaked, that was Vol... Harry! Harry! Are you all right?
Hermione was running towards them down the path, Hagrid puffing along behind her.
I'm fine, said Harry, hardly knowing what he was saying. The unicorn's dead, Hagrid. It's in that clearing back there.
This is where I leave you, Firenze murmured, as Hagrid hurried off to examine the unicorn. You're safe now.
Harry slid off his back.
Good luck, Harry Potter, said Firenze. The planets have been read wrongly before now, even by centaurs. I hope this is one of those times.
He turned and cantered back into the depths of the forest, leaving Harry shivering behind him. Ron had fallen asleep in the dark common room, waiting for them to return. He shouted something about Quidditch fouls when Harry roughly shook him awake. In a matter of seconds, though, he was wide-eyed, as Harry began to tell him and Hermione what had happened in the forest. Harry couldn't sit down. He paced up and down in front of the fire. He was still shaking. Snape wants the stone for Voldemort. And Voldemort's waiting in the forest. And all this time we thought Snape just wanted to get rich. Stop saying the name, said Ron in a terrified whisper, as if he thought Voldemort could hear them. Harry wasn't listening. Firenze saved me, but he shouldn't have done. Bane was furious. He was talking about interfering with what the planets say is going to happen. They must show that Voldemort's coming back. Bane thinks Firenze should let Voldemort kill me. I suppose that's written in the stars as well.
Will you stop saying the name? Ron hissed. So all I've got to wait for now is Snape to steal the stone, Harry went on feverishly. Then Voldemort will be able to come and finish me off. Well, I suppose Bane'll be happy.
Hermione looked very frightened, but she had a word of comfort.
Harry, everyone says Dumbledore's the only one you-know-who was ever afraid of. With Dumbledore around, you-know-who won't touch you. Anyway, who says the centaurs are right? It sounds like fortune-telling to me, and Professor McGonagall says that's a very imprecise branch of magic.
The sky had turned light before they stopped talking. They went to bed exhausted, their throats sore. But the night surprises weren't over. When Harry pulled back his sheets, he found his invisibility cloak folded neatly underneath them. There was a note pinned to it. Just in case.
Chapter 16. Through the Trap Door. In years to come, Harry would never quite remember how he had managed to get through his exams when he half expected Voldemort to come bursting through the door at any moment. Yet the days crept by, and there could be no doubt that Fluffy was still alive and well behind the locked door. It was sweltering hot, especially in the large classroom where they did their written papers. They had been given special new quills for the exams, which had been bewitched with an anti-cheating spell. They had practical exams as well. Professor Flitwick called them one by one into his class to see if they could make a pineapple tap dance across a desk. Professor McGonagall watched them turn a mouse
into a snuff-box. Points were given for how pretty the snuff-box was, but taken away if it had whiskers. Snape made them all nervous, breathing down their necks while they tried to remember how to make a forgetfulness potion. Harry did the best he could, trying to ignore the stabbing pains in his forehead, which had been bothering him ever since his trip into the forest. Neville thought Harry had a bad case of exam nerves because Harry couldn't sleep. But the truth was that Harry kept being woken by his old nightmare, except that it was now worse than ever because there was a hooded figure dripping blood in it. Maybe it was because they hadn't seen what Harry had seen in the forest, or because they didn't have scars burning on their foreheads, but Ron and Hermione didn't seem as worried about the stone as Harry. The idea of Voldemort certainly scared them, but he didn't keep visiting them in dreams, and they were so busy with their revision they didn't have much time to fret about what Snape or anyone else might be up to. Their very last exam was History of Magic. 1 hour of answering questions about batty old wizards who'd invented self-stirring cauldrons, and they'd be free. Free for a whole wonderful week, until their exam results came out. When the ghost of Professor Binns told them to put down their quills and roll up their parchment, Harry couldn't help cheering with the rest. "That was far easier than I thought it would be," said Hermione, as they joined the crowds flocking out into the sunny grounds. "I needn't have learnt about the 1637 werewolf code of conduct, or the uprising of Elfric the Eager." Hermione always liked to go through their exam papers afterwards, but Ron said this made him feel ill, so they wandered down to the lake and flopped under a tree. The Weasley twins and Lee Jordan were tickling the tentacles of a giant squid, which was basking in the warm shallows. "No more revision," Ron sighed happily, stretching out on the grass. "You could look more cheerful, Harry. We've got a week before we find out how badly we've done. There's no need to worry yet." Harry was rubbing his forehead. "I wish I knew what this means!" he burst out angrily. "My scar keeps hurting. It's happened before, but never as often as this." "Go to Madame Pomfrey," Hermione suggested. "I'm not ill," said Harry. "I think it's a warning. It means danger's coming." Ron couldn't get worked up. It was too hot. "Harry, relax. Hermione's right. The stone's safe as long as Dumbledore's around. Anyway, we've never had any proof Snape found out how to get past Fluffy. He nearly had his leg ripped off once. He's not going to try it again in a hurry. And Neville will play Quidditch for England before Hagrid lets Dumbledore down." Harry nodded, but he couldn't shake off a lurking feeling that there was something he'd forgotten to do, something important. When he tried to explain this, Hermione said, "That's just the exams. I woke up last night and was halfway through my transfiguration notes before I remembered we'd done that one." Harry was quite sure the unsettled feeling didn't have anything to do with work, though. He watched an owl flutter towards the school across the bright blue sky, a note clamped in its mouth. Hagrid was the only one who ever sent him letters. Hagrid would never betray Dumbledore. Hagrid would never tell anyone how to get past Fluffy. Never. But Harry suddenly jumped to his feet. "Where are you going?" said Ron sleepily. "I've just thought of something," said Harry. He had gone white. "We've got to go and see Hagrid now." "Why?" panted Hermione, hurrying to keep up. "Don't you think it's a bit odd," said Harry, scrambling up the grassy slope, "that what Hagrid wants more than anything else is a dragon, and a stranger turns up who just happens to have an egg in his pocket? How many people wander around with dragon eggs if it's against wizard law? Lucky they found Hagrid, don't you think? Why didn't I see it before?" "What are you on about?" said Ron, but Harry, sprinting across the grounds towards the forest, didn't answer. Hagrid was sitting in an armchair outside his house. His trousers and sleeves were rolled up, and he was shelling peas into a large bowl. "Hello," he said, smiling. "Finished your exams? Got time for a drink?"
"Yes, please," said Ron, but Harry cut across him. "No, we're in a hurry. Hagrid, I've got to ask you something. You know that night you won Norbert? What did the stranger you were playing cards with look like?"
"Dunno," said Hagrid casually. "He wouldn't take his cloak off."
He saw the three of them look stunned and raised his eyebrows.
"That's not that unusual. You get a lot of funny folk in the Hogshead. That's the pub down in the village. Might have been a dragon dealer, mightn't he? I never saw his face. He kept his hood up."
Harry sank down next to the bowl of peas. "What did you talk to him about, Hagrid? Did you mention Hogwarts at all?"
"Might have come up," said Hagrid, frowning as he tried to remember.
"Yeah, he asked what I did, and I told him I was gamekeeper here. He asked a bit about the sort of creatures I look after, so I told him, and I said what I'd always really wanted was a dragon. And then, I can't remember it too well, because he kept buying me drinks. Let's see. Oh, yeah, then he said he had the dragon egg, and we could play cards for it if I wanted, but he had to be sure I could handle it. He didn't want it to go to any old home. So I told him, after Fluffy, a dragon would be easy."
"And did he seem interested in Fluffy?" Harry asked, trying to keep his voice calm.
"Well, yeah. How many three-headed dogs do you meet, even around Hogwarts? So I told him, Fluffy's a piece of cake if you know how to calm him down. Just play him a bit of music, and he'll go straight off to sleep."
Hagrid suddenly looked horrified.
"I shouldn't have told you that," he blurted out. "Forget I said it. Hey, where are you going?"
Harry, Ron, and Hermione didn't speak to each other at all until they came to a halt in the entrance hall, which seemed very cold and gloomy after the grounds. "We've got to go to Dumbledore," said Harry. "Hagrid told that stranger how to get past Fluffy, and it was either Snape or Voldemort under that cloak. It must have been easy once he'd got Hagrid drunk. I just hope Dumbledore believes us. Firenze might back us up if Bane doesn't stop him. Where's Dumbledore's office?" They looked around, as if hoping to see a sign pointing them in the right direction. They had never been told where Dumbledore lived, nor did they know anyone who had been sent to see him. "We'll just have to..." Harry began, but a voice suddenly rang across the hall.
"What are you three doing inside?"
It was Professor McGonagall, carrying a large pile of books.
"We want to see Professor Dumbledore,"
said Hermione, rather bravely, Harry and Ron thought.
"See Professor Dumbledore?"
Professor McGonagall repeated, as though this was a very fishy thing to want to do.
"Why?"
Harry swallowed. Now what?
"It's sort of secret," he said,
but he wished at once he hadn't, because Professor McGonagall's nostrils flared. "Professor Dumbledore left 10 minutes ago," she said coldly. "He received an urgent owl from the Ministry of Magic and flew off for London at once."
"He's gone," said Harry frantically. "Now?"
"Professor Dumbledore is a very great wizard, Potter. He has many demands on his time."
"But this is important. Something you have to say is more important than the Ministry of Magic, Potter."
"Look," said Harry, throwing caution to the winds.
"Professor, it's about the Philosopher's Stone."
Whatever Professor McGonagall had expected, it wasn't that. The books she was carrying tumbled out of her arms, but she didn't pick them up.
"How do you know?" she spluttered.
"Professor, I know that someone's going to try and steal the stone. I've got to talk to Professor Dumbledore." She eyed him with a mixture of shock and suspicion. "Professor Dumbledore will be back tomorrow," she said finally. "I don't know how you found out about the stone, but rest assured, no one can possibly steal it. It's too well protected."
"But, Professor..."
"Potter, I know what I'm talking about," she said shortly. She bent down and gathered up the fallen books. "I suggest you all go back outside and enjoy the sunshine." But they didn't. "It's tonight," said Harry, once he was sure Professor McGonagall was out of earshot. "Snape's going through the trapdoor tonight. He's found out everything he needs, and now he's got Dumbledore out of the way. He sent that note. I bet the Ministry of Magic will get a real shock when Dumbledore turns up."
"But what can we..."
Hermione gasped. Harry and Ron wheeled round. Snape was standing there.
"Good afternoon," he said smoothly. They stared at him. "You shouldn't be inside on a day like this," he said, with an odd, twisted smile. "We were..." Harry began without any idea what he was going to say. "You want to be more careful," said Snape. "Hanging around like this, people will think you're up to something. And Gryffindor really can't afford to lose any more points, can they?" Harry flushed. They turned to go back outside, but Snape called them back. "Be warned, Potter. Any more night-time wanderings, and I will personally make sure you are expelled. Good day to you." He strode off in the direction of the staff room. Out on the stone steps, Harry turned to the others. "Right, here's what we've got to do," he whispered urgently. "One of us has got to keep an eye on Snape. Wait outside the staff room and follow him if he leaves it. Hermione, you'd better do that."
"Why me?"
"It's obvious," said Ron. "You can pretend to be waiting for Professor Flitwick, you know," he put on a high voice.
"Oh, Professor Flitwick, I'm so worried. I think I got question 14B wrong."
"Oh, shut up," said Hermione. But she agreed to go and watch out for Snape. "And we'd better stay outside the third floor corridor," Harry told Ron. "Come on." But that part of the plan didn't work. No sooner had they reached the door separating Fluffy from the rest of the school than Professor McGonagall turned up again. And this time she lost her temper.
"I suppose you think you're harder to get past than a pack of enchantments," she stormed. "Enough of this nonsense! If I hear you've come anywhere near here again, I'll take another 50 points from Gryffindor. Yes, Weasley, from my own house."
Harry and Ron went back to the common room. Harry had just said, "At least Hermione's on Snape's tail," when the portrait of the fat lady swung open and Hermione came in.
"I'm sorry, Harry," she wailed. "Snape came out and asked me what I was doing, so I said I was waiting for Flitwick, and Snape went to get him, and I've only just got away. I don't know where Snape went."
"Well, that's it then, isn't it?" Harry said. The other two stared at him. He was pale, and his eyes were glittering. "I'm going out of here tonight, and I'm going to try and get to the stone first."
"You're mad," said Ron. "You can't," said Hermione. "After what McGonagall and Snape have said, you'll be expelled."
"So what?" Harry shouted. "Don't you understand? If Snape gets hold of the stone, Voldemort's coming back. Haven't you heard what it was like when he was trying to take over? There won't be any Hogwarts to get expelled from. He'll flatten it or turn it into a school for the dark arts. Losing points doesn't matter anymore, can't you see? Do you think he'll leave you and your families alone if Gryffindor win the House Cup? If I get caught before I can get to the stone, well, I'll have to go back to the Dursleys and wait for Voldemort to find me there. It's only dying a bit later than I would have done, because I'm never going over to the dark side. I'm going through that trapdoor tonight, and nothing you two say is going to stop me. Voldemort killed my parents, remember?" He glared at them.
"You're right, Harry," said Hermione in a small voice.
"I'll use the invisibility cloak," said Harry. "It's just lucky I got it back."
"But will it cover all three of us?" said Ron.
All three of us?"
"Oh, come off it. You don't think we'd let you go alone?"
"Of course not," said Hermione briskly. "How do you think you'd get to the stone without us? I'd better go and look through my books. There might be something useful. But if we get caught, you two will be expelled too."
"Not if I can help it," said Hermione grimly. "Flitwick told me in secret that I got 112% on his exam. They're not throwing me out after that."